In the commentaries, they line up the five hindrances beside the five factors of the first jhana, and that's a really it's a very nice way of both seeing how those factors of jhana are not just something that manifest out of thin air. They arise out of say the overcoming and skillful diminishing of the hindrances, and also that the hindrances have specific antidotes that are useful to bring up when one is confronting a particular hindrance. So that the way that that it's generally sort of lined up is that they say, well, the five factors of jhana are vitakka, vichara, bhiti, sukha, ekagata. Vitakka as of initial thought awareness. Sometimes it's even used around to say that sustained awareness, and then the vichara is more used as reflection as well. But I like to use that initial and sustained thought. As vitakka vichara, the initial thought as vitakka, and sustained thought around vichara, and then vichara can then you can branch off into more reflective aspects if one wishes, but it's on a basic level. Vichara is that sustained thought, piti as in joy or rapture, sukha and happiness, ekagata as one-pointedness of mind, focus of mind. And the vitakka is lines up with is its opposite is the sloth and torpor. Vichara is the antidote for doubt, skeptical doubt, vichikicca. Bhiti, joy or rapture is sort of the antidote for ill will and aversion. Sukha, happiness is the kind of the antidote for restlessness and worry. And ekagata, one-pointedness, is the antidote for sensual desire. So that vitakka, the quality of vitakka, is that lifting up of the mind, that initial thought, the raising up of the clear intention in the mind, the raising up of a thought process in the mind, raising up of an object in the mind. And just that raising up in itself is goes against the kind of the lassitude, sloth, torpor of the mind that's sinking. It's sort of sinking, it's drifting, it's diffuse, it's kind of lazy, shiftless, lazy, shiftless mind. Yeah. So that vitakka, that raising up of the initial thought, that raising up of the thought process, raising up of attention, bringing attention onto an object, bringing attention onto the breath, bringing attention onto the Buddho, whatever, lifting of attention onto an object, vitakka. And as soon as you lift that up, just that very effort dispels that sloth, that sort of lassitude of mind. And so as one continues to lift that up, then one then that sloth and torpor is dispelled. It needs that initial lifting up to be able to get past the sloth and torpor. And you know, obviously one needs to, you know, if the mind drifts or is unable to sustain attention, one has to keep lifting the mind up. And again, that sort of, there's no sort of model that is absolutely perfect. And so, because one does, in order to sort of, say, maintain or to really dispel sloth and torpor, then one needs to sustain that lifting up of the mind. But I think that you know, as a model goes, this is a good sort of, okay, these are sort of basic antidotes. But that, I remember one time watching Ajahn Chah, he was one of the senior monks at Wat Pa Pong, and he's just a little bit junior to Ajahn Liam, and he and Ajahn Liam took on a lot of duties at Wat Pa Pong during the time that I was training there. And one time Ajahn Chah was off, he went to a katina somewhere, I think it was up at Ajahn Kinrali's monastery, which was a couple hundred kilometers north, and or went to a ceremony, and then they up all night there, drove back that day, came back to Wat Pa Pong, and there was another all night session happening. They arrived basically right at in time for evening puja, came into evening puja, and most of the others went back to rest after. And Ajahn Chah stayed on after the after evening puja, and there was it was some sort of ceremony because there was talks that night, and he was, I mean, he was obviously really tired because he wanted just helping out at a ceremony, then being up all night the night before and driving the whole next day and not getting any sleep at all, and then sitting listening to more boring talks on Dhamma. He was falling asleep, but he kept picking himself up, and just that lifting up of the, you could just sort of feel that he was lifting himself up, and you know, he'd fall asleep and he'd pick himself up, he'd fall asleep and pick himself up, and that way because talk started probably about 10 o'clock at night, and he'd fall asleep, he'd just go down, he'd pick himself up. And then it's about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and you see him pick himself up. And he didn't move after that, until about, you know, till morning chanting, 3 or 3:30. It just kept working with that, okay, lifting up the mind, lifting up the mind, lifting up the mind, lifting up the mind, bringing the mind back. And that sloth and torpor just dissipates. Because one's gaining that energy from the lifting up and putting the mind on the object. So that vitakka lifting up the mind to the object, lifting up the attention to the Dhamma, lifting up the awareness to what one should be attentive to. And so that vitakka is a very important quality of mind that we need to have the patience to just keep bringing the mind back to its object. Right? Keep bringing the mind back to the Dhamma, keep lifting up the mind to that which is wholesome and skillful. Vichara is a sustained application of mind, and that again is the in this model is the antidote for doubt, skeptical doubt, wavering. So that as one sustains attention on an object, sustains attention on the Dhamma, sustains awareness on the teachings, things become clear. And obviously that, you know, that vichara is a if you sustain attention on an object of sensuality, then you're going to have a very different result. That's, I mean, intrinsically vichara is the bringing the mind to the say an object of meditation or an object of awareness. It has a wholesome connotation. One's reflecting on Dhamma. One isn't just absorbing into having sustained attention on, you know, some thought of ill will or something. That is a whole different kettle of fish. But that vichara is that bringing attention to the either to meditation object, to a theme of contemplation, and as one sustains that attention and sustains that application of mind, then doubt, wavering, skepticism is dispelled. It doesn't have a hold. It doesn't grab the mind in the same way that it did before. So that too, working with this vichara, sustained application, so that there's waver, not buying into that sort of wavering and doubtful quality of mind. Piety of joy, rapture, sort of delight in things really dispels that negativity of aversion. And you know, it's something that we can bring attention to. Bringing attention to that which is joyful or is has a sense of delight in it, of something which is very wholesome and is associated with Dhamma, associated with a memory of something, associated with a quality of well-being. Those are thoughts of obvious thoughts of loving kindness are intrinsically wholesome in that way, tending to a sense of well-being and warmth within the heart, so that has the capacity to dispel that tendency to the hindrance of aversion, ill will, dislike, anger. So it's the antidote that one needs to bring attention to. The sukha, the quality of happiness, and happiness both in terms of internally of within the mind, the heart, being very happy, and physically as well, that the quality of feeling very full, replete, happy in that way. In the commentaries, when they talk about try to give the illustration, well, what's the difference between piti and sukha? What's the difference between joy and happiness? Then they give the illustration of a person who's walking in a desert or in an area on a journey that is in the wilderness, and you're hot, you're tired, you're thirsty, and there's no break in it. It just seems endless. But then you see somebody who's they look like they've just, their hair is wet, they look fresh, they're clean and they're not dusty, and they look refreshed, and they tell you, oh yeah, I've just come from like an oasis, an area where there's a pond, there's trees for shade, there's good drinking water there, there's a place for bathing, it's a place where you can rest. And what would come up in the mind is this quote, joy. Ah, wow, okay, looking forward to that, and this excite joy. And then when one actually gets to that place, one's able to bathe, refresh one's body, to drink as much nice, clean, pure water, and dispel one's thirst, sit under the shade in a cool spot, and just to be able to feel physically and mentally at ease and happy. That's a difference between, say, joy and happiness. The joy is more on the mental level of that kind of rapture and certain expectation of more to come, and the happiness is more of a settled and replete feeling that is through the body and the mind. So that sukha, that happiness, is a antidote to restlessness, worry, that kind of agitation in the mind that is there. So that when there's that feeling of tranquility in the body, the mind feeling replete and full, then that restlessness has nowhere to stand. It's dispelled. It's in abeyance. It's settled. In meditation, bringing attention to those things that are physically and mentally relaxing, settling, peaceful, pleasing to the mind, pleasing to consciousness, and pleasing in the sense of in accordance with Dhamma as well. It always has one has to qualify that. The sensual desire, the antidote being ekakata, being one-pointedness of mind. There's that tendency of the mind to go out, is so strong. To be able to bring the mind and settle it on a point of awareness, and to return to that point of awareness, that one-pointedness. And sort of the that strong sort of draw and pull fascination with something other than the present moment, something else that's going to fulfill, something outside that's going to satisfy. And that sensual desire is always going out looking for gratification, satisfaction, fascination, looking for the, and that's the Ajahn Chah using the image of looking, the person looking for the turtle with a mustache, and that's the. It's like looking for happiness in sensual desire, looking for satisfaction in the world outside, and so looking for the turtle with a mustache. It's always, one never finds it, and not yet anyway. It's not. I don't think there's a genus of in the animal realm that is devoted to turtles with mustaches. It just isn't there. That that returning to one-pointedness, ekakata. In terms of how we work with it, oftentimes what I do when I'm sitting is just return to that, with the breath, that, okay, vitakka, lifting the, as the breathing in, vitakka, bringing the mind up to the sensation of the tip of the nose or in the body itself, which are just feeling the whole body as the breath goes out. As the breath comes in, be it deep, really bringing in a quality of joy and light. And sukha, as the breath goes out, with on the out breath, to sukha in terms of pervading it through the whole body. As the breath comes in, ekakata, holding that one point. As the breath goes out, ekakata, holding that one point. And vitakka, bringing the breath in. So following that through, that vitakka, vijara, piti, sukha, ekakata, pervading the, lifting up awareness, sustaining it, pervading awareness and a sense of well-being through the whole body, through the mind. And just working with that, one pointing, and then when everything feels very settled, then to just to drop the use of the verbiage of using those words, and then just staying with the sensation of the breath as it comes in, the breath as it goes out. Finding a point that is clear, and the mind is interested to stay there, and to hold that, work with that, staying with that, what's it feel like? Or if one wants to move attention through the body, how does one sustain that attention? And if the mind starts to wander, one loses that track again. Okay, vitakka, lifting up attention, bring it to the breath, all the way in, right to the end of the in-breath. Vichara, the breath going out, feeling the whole body, feeling attention going through the whole body, pervading the whole body with awareness.